All right, let's get into it. Today, we're tackling something that's, well, it's tough, isn't it? Suffering, our own, and maybe even harder, how we actually help friends when they're going through, well, through hell. And we're not just talking theory here. We're going to dive deep into this incredibly old story, find some really sharp insights for today, the mission, figure out why some advice, even well-meaning advice, just falls flat, find some real truth, and, maybe learn how to actually be there for people.
Yeah, and what's fascinating is we're jumping into one of the oldest recorded conversations about grief and devastation. So picture this. Job, a genuinely good guy, loses everything. Just boom, everything's gone. His kids, his health, wealth, and his friends show up, supposedly to comfort him. We're picking it up right after Job is just let loose, total anguish, questioning everything. And his friend Eliphaz steps up. It's a real test, isn't it? Testing truth when life just falls apart.
It really is. So, Eliphaz the Temanite, he speaks first after Job's lament, and his approach, well, people call it measured but flawed. You'll see why pretty quickly. He actually starts, quite gently. He reminds Job, "Hey, remember how you used to teach people? How you strengthened the weak hands, helped those with feeble knees." It's almost like he's saying,
Practice what you preach, Job.
"Exactly. You were good at this. Why aren't you taking your own advice now?"
But from that sort of gentle nudge, he pivots pretty hard. He lays out his core belief, his theology. Basically, innocent people don't suffer like this. He says those who plow iniquity and sow wickedness reap the same. Very direct. To him, getting hit by the blast of God, well, that's what happens when you sow bad seeds. It's almost transactional.
Yeah, like a cause and effect machine, sin in, suffering out. And that was a common way of thinking back then.
Oh, absolutely. A very common understanding of divine justice. Righteousness equals blessing. Sin equals suffering. Simple, maybe too simple.
And then he plays what he must think is his ace card, right? This vision. He describes this mysterious vision he had at night when deep sleep falleth on men. Super creepy. He talks about fear trembling, his bones shaking. And then a spirit passed before my face. He couldn't even make out its shape, just heard a voice. It's quite spooky.
It is. And that eerie quality is meant to give it weight, authority. And the message from this vision, that's the real hammer blow for Eliphaz's argument. The voice asks, basically, can a mortal be more righteous than God? Can a man be purer than his maker? It's all about God's absolute perfection versus human weakness. He even calls humans dwellers in houses of clay, fragile things crushed before the moth.
Wow. So the underlying message is, Job, you must have sinned, even if you don't realize it. Is that it?
That's pretty much it. Yeah, it's a
Yeah.
huge leap, especially when someone's in that much pain. And that assumption that suffering must mean sin,
Yeah.
that's the flawed idea, the flawed theology, that the rest of the book really pushes back against. Job chapter 4 really sets the stage for that whole debate.
Okay, this is where it gets really interesting for us, I think. How does this ancient back and forth speak to us? What can we pull from this for our lives right now?
Right. Well, the first big piece of wisdom, and it's a tough one, is that good intentions aren't enough. They can still cause harm. Eliphaz probably wasn't trying to be cruel. He was speaking from, accepted wisdom, maybe genuine concern. But his advice, oversimplified, unhelpful, actively hurtful, actually. It's a warning, isn't it? We have to be so careful about the assumptions we make about why someone is suffering.
Oh, absolutely. We jump to conclusions, try to find easy answers.
Exactly. We want to fix it, explain it away. But Eliphaz shows us how wrong that can go. It forces us to ask, am I assuming too much here? And embracing that humility that maybe we don't have the answers, that actually helps us lean more on God's wisdom, which is way beyond our simple formulas. It builds a different kind of faith, a more trusting one.
That makes sense. And what about the vision, that spooky night visitor?
Yeah, the second point. Spiritual experiences, even powerful ones, need to be checked against the truth. Eliphaz uses his creepy vision to back up his flawed argument. But the book of Job itself questions using these kinds of experiences to just explain away suffering. True wisdom involves discernment, judging well. You can't just take every feeling or vision as gospel, especially if it makes God look unjust or contradicts his known character.
So test it. Don't just accept it because it felt spiritual.
Precisely. Testing experiences against, say, the bigger picture of Scripture, God's character revealed over time. That's vital for genuine obedience, for a faith that's solid, not just based on, fleeting feelings.
Okay. And the third point you mentioned.
The big one, maybe. Not all suffering is punishment. This was a huge assumption back then, and honestly, it still lingers today. But Job's story just smashes that idea. Understanding this is crucial. It lets us hold on to God's goodness, even when life is incredibly hard, without that knee-jerk reaction of what did I do wrong, and actually deepens our faith, makes it more resilient.
Those are really powerful. So translating that, how does this play out for us day to day when our friend is hurting or when we are?
Well, first, it means being incredibly careful with easy explanations. You know the ones. Everything happens for a reason. God's testing you, or even hinting, like Eliphaz. Maybe there's something you need to deal with.
Ugh, yeah, I've probably said some of those myself, meaning well.
We all have. It's natural to want to make sense of things. But Job 4 is like a giant flashing warning sign. These explanations often do more harm than good. They can shut people down.
Make them feel even more alone, like you said. It's like we try to tie a neat bow on immense pain, and it just doesn't fit.
Exactly right. Which leads to the next practical point. Support starts with empathy, not theology. Eliphaz jumped straight to the why. He should have just been there. Today, that means presence over platitudes. Those quick, easy, often hollow phrases.
Yeah, the spiritual cliches.
Right. Sometimes the most profoundly spiritual thing you can do is just sit with someone, quietly, in their pain. No answers needed. That's unconditional love in action. That builds real connection, real faith community, learning to love each other, even in the messy parts.
It takes discipline, though, doesn't it, to just sit in the silence, the discomfort. Our instinct is to fix.
It really does, but it's so important. And connected to Eliphaz's vision again, it reminds us not to automatically equate any spiritual feeling or experience with ultimate truth.
Especially if it leads to a distorted view of God, like it did for Eliphaz.
Yes, that's key. Test those personal revelations. Mm-hmm. Does this align with God's character as we know it? Does it lead to love and compassion or judgment? That kind of discernment is crucial for real obedience, for a faith that's grounded, not just tossed around by experiences.
Okay. And you also mentioned the tough truth about righteous suffering.
Yeah. We have to internalize this. Good people suffer deeply. It happens. That old idea, be good, get good stuff, be bad, get bad stuff. Job just blows that up. We need a faith, a practical understanding of God that can handle both blessing and burden. Without needing easy answers for everything, it's about trusting God's sovereignty, his bigger plan, even when it's completely mysterious to us. That fosters maturity, resilience, and actually encourages obedience even when things don't make sense.
Trusting even in the mystery, that's hard.
It is. And finally, all this points toward building friendships that allow for that mystery. Friendships that don't demand quick fixes. Job needed comfort, right? He got correction. Eliphaz turned the living room into a courtroom.
Oof. Courtroom versus living room. That really paints a picture.
Doesn't it? So in our own relationships, can we learn to just hold space, to allow for grief, for questions, for the messy middle? That's how you build authentic unity, real faith. By being willing to sit in that tension together, showing up for each other, even when it's uncomfortable, and trusting God together through it.
So looking back at Job 4, it's packed with lessons, isn't it? Discernment, empathy, understanding suffering. It's about being a better friend and maybe a wiser believer, too.
Absolutely. And that core verse, Job 4.7, where Eliphaz asks, whoever perished, being innocent, where were the righteous cut off? That question itself holds the key. It reveals his flawed assumption. Suffering must mean guilt, and the whole book argues against that, really wrestling with this, with the fact that God's ways aren't always simple cause and effect, that can actually strengthen our obedience, our trust, our faith, especially when we're the ones in the trial.
It forces a deeper reliance on God, not on our own understanding. So maybe something for all of us to think about this week as you reflect on Job and on Eliphaz's attempt at comfort. How might you personally lean more into offering a comforting presence rather than jumping to an explanation the next time someone you care about is really hurting?